Welcome everyone to What the Force. I'm Marie-Claire Gould, your host, and today we have an interesting discussion on how Rebels has foreshadowed the sequel trilogy. And with me to discuss it is Hammy. Welcome back, Hammy.
Hi, I'm so excited to be back.
Rebels has foreshadowed what now? Who? How?
The sequel trilogy? What? Who could have guessed this?
I don't know. I mean, a few people, actually. It's something I've discussed, actually, on the podcast itself when I was covering the last few episodes of Rebels, when I started out brand new baby podcaster talking about Rebels because it was the last season, last few episodes. And I said to myself, they're telling the story of Star Wars. This is important. They're foreshadowing. And they're giving us Star Wars concepts simplified, boiled down to the essential motifs and themes to be able to tell us all about what Star Wars is all about for kids.
Exactly.
It's really interesting because, you know, through the last, I don't know, month of podcasting or so, I've really dug into the ring theory and what it means for Star Wars and how Star Wars tells these repetitive stories. And I've talked about it for, well, it feels like over a year. I've been talking about the repetitive storytelling in Star Wars, but especially the ring structure itself creates a circle. And inside of Star Wars, there's little circles that reflect and parallel the larger circles. And it is used to basically tell these narrative motifs over and over and over again to show us these very humanistic situations for characters. And sometimes each of them will be a little bit different. There might be, you know, it ends a little bit different. There might be an extra battle that somebody has to face and that ends up having them fail. Or they may end up, you know, being successful, like in some ways how Ezra is at the end of Rebels. And it's just really important to talk about this because it means if you look back in time or forward in time within Star Wars from the point that you're looking, you may see a similar story told before.
I think it's also important because it reflects how society works too and how our own personal journeys are. So everything that's happened in history before, you can reflect on that and look at the same things. And so when we're looking at Star Wars in that lens of, hey, we're not just telling a new story with the sequel trilogy. Mm-hmm. We're completing an entire arc of movies, TV shows, all of that kind of stuff.
I kind of have two quotes. The first is from Santayana, who said, "Those who do not study history are doomed to repeat it." And the next one is actually from The Hero with a Thousand Faces. Joseph Campbell said that myth is the dreams of the collective unconscious, and dreams are the personal myth. So that's how these things are very tied back and forth between the large journey, the you know, galaxy-wide experience and journey that we are seeing in Star Wars as this modern-day myth and how it relates to us personally. These are our humanistic myths, and so they will repeat because it's full of the archetypes of how we are trying to process, basically, being human.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, some other amazing people have also pointed out that this is not just, you know, something that is, you know, just happening by accident. You know, I've had several episodes. Reverse on Adala covers the structure really, really well. That episode with Chelsea. We also did an episode on Vader Immortal and kind of how the repetitive storytelling is happening, specifically to do with the Skywalker saga. We might find out that there's way more repetitive storytelling happening that we're just not aware of yet. But we use the Skywalker saga as a lens because it is the core, like the prime story that we're telling right now. In the future, when we move past the Skywalker saga, it may be very, very different.
I know. We'll have to wait and see how it all shakes out. But I think it'll still come back, connect to the stories that we've been telling. I can't imagine that it would change so vastly that we couldn't make connections and thematic repetition to what we're already
seeing. I think we'll still get it. Yeah. Especially if they end up kind of telling the Sith and Jedi split eventually, that will itself be like a larger ring to the overall story itself, right? So the Skytalkers themselves talk about how you can actually look to the future of storytelling in the animation. That's actually one of their big look to the animation for the future of Star Wars, like their big taglines.
One of my favorite quotes.
Yeah, they bring it up a lot. Hey, Hammy, it's because they're all like, "Hey, we noticed this. We noticed this," and then they bring it up.
Yeah, really, definitely. Great. Even when I was first becoming a fan and I was listening to you and then listening to them, it was just really cool because it was nice to find fans who didn't see the animation and the stories that were being told in the animation as separate from the main saga, that it's all connected. It's all one story, as we've been saying. So it's great to find those elements of where things that are happening in the animation, and we'll talk about it in full length with Rebels, how things happen in animation, and then you see them exactly the same. The saga, or a reflection of that, or almost a retelling of it, with, like you said, a ding or a different
outcome. it's like sometimes you almost have to squint and then you see it very clearly in the overall narrative structure. It's really fascinating. So we're going to call out a bunch of those examples in this episode during this discussion. And I'm really, really excited to dig into it. But again, if you're looking for good recap shows, if you're just getting into the animation, Skytalkers covered all of Rebels, and as well as they're covering Resistance. So they're really great recap shows. I also listen to the Balance podcast and Geeky Bubbly. So it's also Rebels pod. They're going through all of the shows and they do detailed analysis of all of the Rebels episodes. I think they're midway through season. Let's see here. Which episode was I on? Midway through season 3, I believe. So they're getting along. So if you're just starting now and you're looking for a recap show, you can probably find one through any of those places.
Because we'll definitely be talking spoilers right now.
We're going to be digging into the spoilers. The show has been out for a little while now, so it's been a year and a half since it finished, almost the length of the podcast. So
yeah, it's kind of crazy to think about that the season finale was that long ago. And now I think because of the Tross promo, we're like seeing all of this come together. And it's like, we need to look back at Rebels because it's a story.
And, you know, I'm also looking back at Clone Wars and the prequels and the original trilogy because it's supposed to tie everything together. And Star Wars being one story means that anything could be important from a thematic and motif perspective, especially if it repeats. If it repeats, it's going to be super important. I do want to kind of talk a little bit about Ezra himself, because he is set up from the beginning of Rebels as the main POV point of view character for our audience to kind of identify with, right? He is the hero who is waiting for his call to adventure.
Yeah, he's and, kind of living a life, going through this cycle, kind of, which is what we all do, right? We're just doing, working our grind and doing what we have to survive. And then, like you mentioned, he gets his call to adventure and then his whole life changes and he finds everything he's searching for and more.
Exactly. And, you know, his call comes in the form of kind of running into these rebels who are on another mission. They're trying to get supplies for, you know, kind of a different group to sell things so that they can continue to operate within the planet of Lothal. And Lothal itself, being kind of an outer rim world, is similar to Jakku in a lot of ways. So there's a lot of similarities from a character perspective in background and experience between Ezra and Rey. And a lot of people pointed out that Ezra Bridger was named that way, as almost like a play on the phrase Era Bridger. Like,
I love that so much. And it fits well now that when we go through all of what we have planned for Rebels and how it connects to the saga, it makes so sense that he would serve as that character.
Because Rebels started a full year before, you know, TFA, which means it was in pre-production and production 3 years before TFA came out. You know, script writing, design, concept art, all of that. It takes a really long time to create these properties. And so both of them were almost in creation at the same time. And so the character himself, Ezra, is a, you know, person that is in some ways a lot like Aladdin, like trying to just get through. But he lives in his lone outpost, you know, out of the edge of civilization. He rides a speeder into town. He, like, there's a lot of these, like, thematic similarities between him and Rey. He basically has to scavenge, you know, what he can to survive. And he collects trophies, including helmets, like Rey has her own helmet. It's kind of interesting when you start viewing it through this really interesting lens.
No, definitely. I saw all of those similarities. And me personally, as a pun, call him a loath wolf, like a lone wolf. And yeah. So is Rey. And they're waiting for their pack. And at by the end of Rebels, of course, he does find his pack and a literal pack of wolves. So
yeah, exactly. Like at the end of Rebels, he's like adopted by the pack, which is awesome. What ends up kind of kicking off both of their force journeys is, for Ezra, it is, you know, he kind of uses the force innately, and I suspect that was the same for Rey. But I'm gonna draw a weird parallel, which is when Ezra unlocks the holocron is when his force journey actually begins. That is when he picks it up and he realizes that he has the ability to unlock it. And for Rey, her first ability begins when Kylo, in a way, unlocks it in her.
Exactly.
And the holocron shows up at interesting places in the show, like later on, especially when we think about when Kylo is there for Rey. Fascinating.
No, it definitely works. I until you had mentioned it to me, I hadn't thought about it that way, but rewatching, you know, Twilight of the Apprentice and that last moment when he unlocks the holocron kind of all fell into place that, okay, up until then he was kind of more learning about the Force from Kanan, but it was just his innate abilities, the same way it was for Rey, where she doesn't even realize that she's using the Force on Jakku. Mm-hmm. And then from that journey on, but someone offers to teach her the same things. They kind of follow these same similar paths. And it all has that starting point of oddly someone who's on the dark side who triggers this other exploration of the Force for them. Mm-hmm.
Later on, we see when Ezra, I think it's in season 2, when he's exploring aspects of the Force for himself, he opens up the holocron and he's actually watching an animation of Anakin using his lightsaber and basically kind of explaining how to use, you know, these different stances and forms. And Ahsoka speaks to Ezra about her old master. And, you know, Kylo too, because in holocrons, like, they're almost kind of imprinted with a piece of that person that has that whatever it is that they're teaching them. Kylo, too, has a connection to Anakin, you know, either through his Force visions, whether they're real or not, or just the fact that he is literally of that bloodline. He is got a chunk of Anakin Skywalker in him.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting that is like a direct parallel there.
Are you suggesting that the holocron is Kylo?
I mean, I think that we can at least say that that's Kylo's Force showing up from a story perspective. I think that Maul, like, takes on aspects of Kylo later on, too.
Yeah. And what's also interesting is, like, Maul isn't able to open the holocron without needs both of them.
Yes.
And then of course, there's all these effects afterwards about the two of them being connected. So it's only once Rey and Kylo are together in that intimate setting of the interrogation room and Rey's powers get unlocked that we suspect the bond forms, even, you know, that the bond forms and that their journey begins and all of that. So it's kind of cool to see that parallel as well, because Maul had been, we don't know how long, right, in the Sith Temple.
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know how long. And before that, actually, when we see, you know, Vader realize that Ahsoka is back, we almost see this, you know, fascinating parallel from Vader's obsession with a girl, a woman out there in the galaxy. The apprentice lives, and Kylo's now obsession with finding Rey. Now we see kind of in auxiliary canon, he has been like searching for her. Same with kind of that, what girl? Like, oh, who is that? You know, the sense in the Force that there is something out there that they must find, seeking from a quest perspective. But yeah, let's talk about Maul and Ezra like together in when they end up getting the Sith holocron together. Cause like, it's such an interesting moment. Like they end up becoming almost like friends because.
Yeah. Like, and really quickly too.
Yeah. Really quickly. And in some ways, you know, there's a parallel to Finn getting hurt and Kanan getting hurt in, you know, the end of the second season. So again, these are like very high level brushstrokes. It's not going to be, you know, this exact plot point lined up exactly with this plot point. It's more of a, you know, narrative structure to say this character went through very similar things. And in some ways, it's so tight together from a from an episode perspective that like it's almost weird, and we'll get to that in the third season with a lot more of the interactions between Maul and Ezra. I think they knew a little bit more about what was going to happen in TLJ, and they drew more direct parallels in season 3 and season 4.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Going back to the Twilight of the Apprentice, we of course have Maul and Ezra teaming up together. They're lifting the rocks and trying to get inside the temple to holocron, and they aren't able to do it alone. They have to do it together. So my dream is that in episode 9, we'll see that Rey and Kylo work together, not just in terms of, oh, we need to defeat people fighting thing, but I would love to see some kind of using the Force together to unlock something.
Yeah, we get that a lot more. Like there are two people it takes to do things. We get that theme a lot in Kanan and Ezra opening up the Lothal Temple, Ezra and Maul opening up the Sith Temple. It definitely seems like that's a repetitive motif that we'll see in the future, that it takes two to do the unlocking of sacred places. And I'm going to bring that up later, definitely. So moving into season 3, there is so much in season 3 that almost directly parallels The Last Jedi.
Yeah, it's crazy when you stop and think about it. I think maybe we needed this much time to kind of reflect on it, but it's because there are the, you know, the obvious examples, the ones that people pointed out right away, one of them being Kana and Leia. Mm-hmm. That was one of the ones that I think maybe because a lot of people were upset about Leia using the Force. I don't know if it was directly that, but it was the fact that she force pulled herself back onto the resistant ship. But anyone who's seen Rebels knows, oh, wait, Kanan does that. So there were those small, shorter examples. But then now when you look at it from a bigger thematic point of view, you can see that there's all these layers that are in Rebels that are reflected directly into The Last Jedi.
Yeah. And that episode came out almost an entire year before The Last Jedi. Mm-hmm. Like when it actually came out, like, and was aired. So it's really funny because like the episode where Ezra plays with in Twilight of the Apprentice, where Ezra plays with the Kylo Ren looking green lightsaber, Dave Filoni was like, oh, you know, we just like to lay these little, like, you know, it's one story things. But really what I think he was trying to say is like, there's a lot more.
Yeah.
Just maybe not looking through it with the right lens.
I can't believe I even forgot about the Kylo green lightsaber until I was rewatching for this episode, you know, for the podcast. And then Ezra just kind of does it really quick and then puts it back down. And I was like, how did we not see it coming?
Ezra himself and Rey at the start of season 3 for Ezra and the start of The Last Jedi for Rey are like trying to find purpose. They're trying to be strong for their respective parties and their respective, factions, but they're struggling with the dark. They're struggling with their power. They don't know what they necessarily, should be doing versus, they're looking for masters, right? So, in season three, some of the following happens. Rey and Ezra are both, Ezra is, looking for purpose, struggling with the dark side, trying to find a master. Ezra finds Bendu, who is this hermit in the middle of nowhere, who wants to be left alone. Who does that sound like?
He says he doesn't want to get involved. I think he says it like multiple times.
Yeah.
Just reminds me of some other person in The Last Jedi.
Yeah. Who's almost given. It's Luke. It's totally Luke. And he's given up on, the Jedi, the Sith. We should burn it all down. We shouldn't prescribe to these things anymore. And Bendu's like, Jedi, Sith, I'm the one in the middle. Like, and Bendu himself is like literally this like gray, like monotone color. He looks almost like an anthropomorphized like rock tree. And when you look at Luke, he's like wearing all this gray material because he just like does not want to be anything but part of the island that he is in. He wants to blend in with the background, much like Bendu.
No, definitely.
Kanan and Ezra go to him several times. They have given over the holocron, the Sith holocron, and the Jedi one, so that they, Ezra's not tempted to use them. Or they've given over the Sith holocron because they've given over the Sith holocron because they don't want to. Kanan is worried he's gonna, go to the dark. And then, Bendu himself is like, once you learn things, you can't take them back. You can't unlearn these things. Very much like Luke saying, this is not going to go the way that you think it's going to go, Ezra. Or sorry, to Rey. Luke saying that to Rey. Whoa, it's confusing. Luke saying to Rey, this is not going to go the way you think it will. It's really not. You're not just going to be able to get answers out of things, And that leads us to specifically the Holocrons of Fate episode, which is, I think it's only like two or three episodes in to season three.
Yeah, it's really early on.
And, Maul captures kind of the rebels of the Ghost, the Gross crew. He's threatening to destroy them. And he's like, bring me the holocron and your body. I need you. And so they do. And it's almost like he ships himself to the location. And we almost, like, there's a few episodes in season three that are like really big call outs to the Last Jedi, just, almost beat for beat with some of the experiences that they go through. So like he, Maul himself starts to kind of almost be like a proto Kylo in some ways. He, uses his power to get information out of Hera, just like Kylo did in TFA. He spaces Kanan, just like Kylo spaces Leia almost exactly by accident. I mean, his people did, but
So Kanan and Leia, when Maul tricks and then he gets shot out into space, Kanan does something almost exactly like Leia does in The Last Jedi. He reaches out with his hand, and I think it's a little bit clearer in the animation, but he force pulls himself back onto the ship. And so Leia almost exactly does the same thing in The Last Jedi, when Kylo's, I guess, flight person shoots the resistance ship and she is shot out into space. She reaches out with her hand and then she pulls herself back in. So like I mentioned earlier, a lot of people were kind of surprised by Leia doing that. But if you had seen Rebels, then you would know that it was something that was possible and then had been done before, almost exactly the same.
Exactly. And then when, you know, Maul convinces Ezra to kind of like leave him alone for a bit while Kanan is in space, they decide to attempt to join the holocrons. So I think that this is really important because it's like a joining of Sith technology, spirituality, and Jedi technology, spirituality. It's literally trying to find the balance between the two. And so they sit down and they meditate and they open up the holocrons with the Force and they're attempting to combine them together. And there's this really great moment where they're all like covered in light and they're reaching out their hands together to try and like get the knowledge, right? That's the key, is they're trying to get the knowledge, which parallels the Rey and Kylo hand touch. Because like when they touch hands, they see something. They see the past and the future.
And it's the Force theme playing. It's a moment of true balance between the both of them. One on the light side, one on the dark side. And they come together in perfect balance.
Yes. And what's so interesting is like these pairs of opposites that try to like, you know, become one. It's like the Force really wants them to come back together. So in that vision, actually, I just want to call out like one really interesting thing. And I've called it out in a separate episode in the Vader Immortal one. But Maul is looking basically for hope. So and hope being that kind of like maybe an end to the suffering, you know, the reasons why everything is happening. And it brings him to Kenobi still being alive. And Ezra doesn't understand the prophecy that he is given, but in it, he asks for the key to defeating the Sith. And the Force shows him a pair of twin sons. And he says the words, twin sons. What's fascinating in the lead up to The Rise of Skywalker is Kylo and Rey are symbolically shown to be standing in front of twin sons.
They're doing this on purpose. There's no way that you don't pick that iconography for no reason. So
yeah, and he doesn't get the answers later on in the season that he wants. He doesn't understand what the key to defeating the Sith are. Mm-hmm. So his original answer was actually correct, which is fascinating.
Definitely. There was one other thing that I kind of wanted to bring up. I think I'm sure a lot of people have, it kind of went a little bit viral in Star Wars land in fandom. But it was when Freddie Prinze Jr. was discussing, he just went on this like 3-minute rant on a podcast about the Force, what it means, and how he's like, I know what happened in The Rise of Skywalker because it's already happened before and it's the same story and you can predict it. My favorite things that he mentioned was that that Maul is Sisyphus, mm-hmm. that he knows he's Sisyphus and he's always suffering and he's pushing the rock up the hill and then the rock comes right back down and he's just pushing and pushing, and that happens over and over again until the episode when he finally finds out about the Chosen One and the twin sons and all of that. It all comes together for him. And that is the only moment of catharsis and release for Maul, is after all of that struggle, that's when he gets it. And it's with Obi-Wan, of course.
Yeah. And Obi-Wan is like his binary son. It's the thing that he's mm-hmm. been chasing his whole existence from when he was caught in kind of the pull of the Emperor's black hole. Really, really interesting. Definitely. We kind of have to leap forward a little bit to Vision and Voices when Maul comes back and is almost haunting Ezra the way that Kylo and Rey talk to each other. Like they can appear in each other's spaces. How is that not a direct reference to the Force bond?
Yeah, no, it's exactly the same. And, you know, and even after The Last Jedi was released, there were still people who were debating whether or not Rey and Kylo had a Force bond almost to that point. They're like, oh, it ended, you know, when and Rey shuts the door of the Falcon. It's over. It's done with. And it's like, no, guys, why would they be putting this as an example of where a force bond is occurring between a dark side user and a light side user? And then it just leads to nowhere in the saga finale. So it's just crazy to think about that they, how early on, because this was season three, that all of this was happening between Maul and Ezra.
Again, a full year before The Last Jedi. Yeah, no, he has visions. He experiences this pull, and basically he thinks he's going crazy. Like, he thinks he's like losing his mind. And then Maul convinces him to go with him to Dathomir, to kind of this like primordial planet, his home, basically. And in that, we find out that using the Night Sister magic, he can brew a potion. This feels very witchy. He can brew a potion by which they can finish the bond and exchange the information and get what they are desiring. His hope, finding Kenobi, and Ezra, his key for defeating the Sith. The interesting thing that I want to just pull out, kind of call back to the Dark Union episode, is that this is something I didn't notice until after I had recorded Dark Union. But if we're talking about Tristan and Isolde direct parallels, the bond that they have in Tristan and Isolde is described as them both sharing wine, the poisoned wine that interlocks their fate going forward.
No, that's exactly what I thought of when you reminded me of that Maul and Ezra and Jess. I immediately, now all I think about is everything is through the lens of Dark Union. So if you haven't listened to that episode, you need to go back and listen to it. So as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh my gosh, that's Tristan and Isolde. Because I think the wine was meant for Isolde's betrothed, correct?
Yes, it was meant to be shared with Mark.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then fate intervenes.
fate intervenes, and Tristan and Isolde, they share the wine and then fall in love. And in some ways, like the brotherly love that Maul is always seeking, he's always looking for companionship. That's like it's a standard thing for Maul. He's always kind of looking for a counterpart to balance him out. So he seeks that with his brother. But he ends up making the same mistakes over and over and over again. And I'm planning to record an episode with Katie Pohat Dameron all about kind of all of these Dark Force users that kind of lead up from a ring theory perspective to the redemption of Ben Solo. So that's gonna be awesome. Yeah, that'll be fun.
I'm sure including my favorite character, Asajj Ventress.
Yes, Asajj is also in there. It's, Maul and Dooku, Asajj, and also, you know, including Anakin, and kind of how each step is almost like a step closer. And they all die in kind of compassionate embrace, in the pieta form.
Yeah, that's exactly
all
what
die
happens.
With compassion, except for Dooku. Poor Dooku. But he was kind of like, he died knowing that his master had betrayed him.
But I mean, from a, you know, story perspective, with Dooku Jedi Lost, we do get a little, at least as readers and listeners, we get a little bit of compassion for Dooku too.
Yes, we do. We do have compassion for Dooku. We should have compassion for these Dark Force users. They're people who are trapped by, you know, the trick of the galaxy, that, you know, the suffering is actually meaningless. It doesn't have meaning. That's okay. But yeah, so in that scene, so they get their answers, they have this force bond, they have the confrontation with the you know, with the sister, or with the Night Sisters who are attacking them. They leave the cave, and then they have this moment, and it is almost exactly paralleling the proposal scene. So I'm going to play the scene so you can listen to it, at least the proposal part of it. And there's a little bit of a description where, you know, obviously Ezra's friends are possessed by the Night Sisters. They're still in trouble. It's not going well for them. Maul and Ezra have left the cave. They're relatively safe, but his mind is on his friends. And this parallels the proposal scene within The Last Jedi after the Praetorian Guard fight. And you can listen to it right now.
Wait, why are they coming after us?
The altar is the source of their power. They cannot venture beyond the cave. It is unfortunate about your friends, Ezra, but this is your opportunity to embrace your destiny as my apprentice.
I told you that is never going to happen!
Forget the past! Forget your memories! Forget your attachments! Our futures converge on a planet with two suns. We can walk that path together! As friends! As brothers!
My friends are trapped in there because of us! I can't just leave them!
You disappoint me! Ezra Bridger.
So it's not a direct parallel, obviously, with the words and everything like that, but the intention is the same. Ezra is looking to his friends, and Maul wants him to join him and, you know, figure out the future together.
He said, forget both sides. Embrace your destiny. You're still holding on. Let go.
Exactly. It is like the proposal scene, but from Maul. Like, it's wacky. It's getting wacky. What ends up happening kind of throughout the rest of, you know, third season are some really interesting kind of similar character motifs. We have a redeemed Imperial officer. We have basically Callous Demption happen. He turns sides. He ends up being recruited to become the new Fulcrum, and he fills the position and ends up kind of atoning over time for the mistakes of his past. And even up until the finale, like, some people still don't trust him. Like, it's really fascinating to see. So we might get a little bit of that too from a Kylo Ben Demption perspective. We also get Sabine practicing with the Darksaber, and the kind of concept that the Darksaber is almost like this legacy lightsaber that she is training to use, to protect, to basically prepare for the rightful owner. Really, really interesting stuff with the whole Mandalorian arc and the rite of succession that ends up happening with it. It's good stuff. I think that that's the main motif. Maybe other people, maybe you see something more within that storytelling. I think it's great storytelling in general, especially when they end up going to Mandalore to have kind of free Mandalore from the different situations, and they're kind of helping the larger rebellion in general. But that's kind of the main thing that I saw. The other, I think, really, really important moment is the PETA moment that ends up happening with Maul, Ezra, and Obi-Wan at the end. And again, they end up forming this like triad in the storytelling. So Ezra and Maul are called to Tatooine because it's almost like the fulfillment of that prophecy. They need to see how it plays out. Ezra ends up having a really interesting conversation with Obi-Wan. I highly recommend that you go and watch that if you haven't watched it. It's like some of the best storytelling in Star Wars. And Ezra is convinced by Obi-Wan to leave because this is not his fight. This is not his time, which is so cool. And Obi-Wan faces Maul, and in almost like an act of mercy, he puts this suffering man out of his misery.
And he not only does that, I mentioned it before, but he not only does that, you know, physically, but then also the hope and the goal that Maul was looking for, that like his final words are about the chosen one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after this vengeance and revenge that he's been on, he thinks that's what he was looking for.
Was the chosen one. Instead
it was the chosen one and that he will avenge us. I think that's what he says. And it's just such a beautiful moment that even in that moment, like you mentioned, Maul is given a compassionate ending, and he no longer has that revenge in his heart when he dies.
And this is where I think like the only way to end the eternal Star Wars is with compassion. That Ben, Rey need to put an end to the suffering of the galaxy, not through hate, not through destruction, not through killing, but through love.
I agree. And I feel like all of these stories are leading to that moment. They aren't repeating these motifs and these themes and the same journey with these characters, just with different endings, for it all to come to a tragic ending of,
yeah,
let's kill Ben Solo. Not that it's just about him, but also that like Rey has to reach that level of understanding herself as well, with her purpose and her thing and all of that. And I just can't see it ending with killings, and that's going to solve her and the trauma in the galaxy.
Exactly. And I do want to point out that the planet itself is a planet with twin suns. So again, it's this number three, right? Tatooine is a planet with twin suns. It is this like triad that is important from a story perspective. And
if you haven't listened to MC's Mortis episode, because she explains why, and we'll get to it too, get to season Rebels, but why that triad is really important. It's not just the dark and the light, but it's also the path between the two.
And it's how you overcome the like, you know, binary challenges. And it's like the universe of Star Wars, the galaxy is trying to tell us three is important. There's a different path than just the binaries, the good and the bad, the, you know, male and female, the light and dark, the above and below. There's a different way to go about things. It keeps on repeating the number three for a reason. It's telling you that there is a third option somewhere.
To connect it back to The Last Jedi, you know, my favorite moment, I think when I was in the theater and I was like, oh, this is probably going to be my favorite Star Wars movie, was when the first lesson with Rey, when she's going through you know, death, life, and she does both of the all the binaries, and then but she doesn't get there yet. Like, she doesn't figure out, oh, that third path.
Yeah, like, because she's still growing, so. And she's still learning. Because, yeah,
right.
Yeah. And you know, this very much ties again to that Rumi quote, out beyond wrongdoing and right doing, there is a field, I will meet you there. And that specifically ties to like this third way of thinking, which is, you know, when you become transcendent and you understand that there is no binaries, we are all interconnected within the Force. And the only way to truthfully live interconnected between all things, if they all exist together, is with compassion towards each other and ourselves.
What a great lesson to teach kids.
I mean, right? Yes.
They should market this franchise to children, because
what are you talking about, Hammy? No, exactly. Like, it is the lesson. It's how we get along with others. It's how we exist in society, and it's how we love our planet, our people, each other, and ourselves.
Connected.
That's okay. So I said, you know, there's also another parallel to Luke at the end of season three, and specifically The Last Jedi, with the connection to, you know, Luke's end in The Last Jedi and what ends up happening with our Luke surrogate in Rebels, Bendu.
I love this comparison that you made. You're so smart, Lucy. with Luke and Bendu, because what happens is, you know, the Bendu for this whole time has been saying, I don't want to get involved. Whatever. It's not worth it. I'm better off. It's better off, you know, not getting involved. Mm-hmm. And then Kanan, he is able to convince Bendu to help the same way that Rey does in The Last Jedi. And so, and then when at the very end, Thrawn confronts Bendu, you find out that he's projecting himself because he shoots Bendu and he disappears. He's gone and everyone is surprised. And it's like, what? That's exactly what happens in The Last Jedi. Like, did they copy Rian Johnson? Which came first, the chicken or the egg? Like, were they discussing, you know, because force projection, that was in the book of the, which book was that? That was the...
I know that they've brought it on, but it was one of the Jedi books.
Yeah, from Legends.
Yeah.
So it's just crazy to see that similarity pop up. And then it also connects, I mean, it's still happening even in the stuff that now leading up to the rise of the Skywalker, because in Kylo's comic, in the Age of Resistance Kylo comic, he goes to Dagobah, and when he goes into the cave, he almost beat for beat has the same fight with Luke says that, yes, I don't want to fight you. And you know, it's crazy because he's confronting his fear. His fear is, you know, Luke and acceptance mm-hmm. with his family. That's what his fear is, but that's literally what he's fighting on Crait. He's not his uncle and who, you know, doesn't love him. It's about the fact that his uncle didn't accept him and that his family didn't accept him. And so that exact same scenario happens in the most recent, you know, Age of Resistance comic with him. And so what ends up happening is he doesn't want to fight Luke, and instead he destroys the cave afterwards because he's not able to get that catharsis as we've been seeing that he wants to get, and he doesn't get that at the end of The Last Jedi either.
And Bendu really fulfills that, like, I don't want to fight, but you know, then ends up, you know, fighting in that very similar way, which is like, okay, like, to your point, you know, they are telling these stories together. It is one story. They're telling this story in a repetitive fashion. And again, it was almost a year before The Last Jedi came out.
So, as our friends, the Skytalkers, you can look to the future of Star Wars with the animation department.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, it's one story. It's the repetitive storytelling. Now we're going to move into season 4 and specifically the Force related stuff. We're just going to talk through a little bit from a speculation perspective and some of the kind of the larger motifs and I would say important things to pay attention to. And again, this is, you know, the Rise of Skywalker speculation. We kind of see some things that might end up becoming important and we want to call them out. We don't know if we're going to be right, but there are some weird things that happen in season 4 that similarly to season 3 are like, huh, they know, they know some things, right?
Right.
In the world between worlds. So they discover through, you know, magical means after Kanan has passed on, very similarly to the loss of the mentor, you know, in The Last Jedi, Luke is gone. They're trying to make their way after. They discover that the temple on Lothal is being raided by the Empire. And I think they find out through the wolves. And through like visions and stuff like that. And they end up traveling to that location. And it is an incredible episode from a metatextual perspective, as well as, you know, internally and the concepts of the Force. And I cover a lot of it in detail in the Elsewhere episode. So if you haven't listened to that, feel free to check it out. As well as Mortis and kind of all of these other Elsewhere places. But outside the temple, they talk about the temple and kind of what it is from a meta perspective. It's archetypes, you know, it is beyond the veil. It is a, you know, it has greater meaning. It's all art. It all means something. You know, they're saying that everything that is happening in the world between worlds has meaning.
I can't believe it. I couldn't, like, just those examples, like those three examples of, they literally say the words, they say archetype, they say beyond the veil, which usually implies that it's not in this realm. So sometimes that can mean, you know, after death, or it can just mean the beyond of what we have yet that you as a human can't see or discover. And then that it's all art. I couldn't even get over how much of how meta it all was until now. And maybe it's because we've had a year to process it. So we've been thinking about archetypes and we've been thinking about art and we've been thinking about, oh, okay, what will Rey and Kylo do beyond? Because they've already kind of tried everything. So they have to reach another level of understanding. And so it just was crazy rewatching this and seeing those exact words. Like, they're literally spelling it out for us. So it's awesome.
So Ezra enters into this, you know, almost like globe of stars. It is a spherical bridge. Ezra Bridger, that has these different portals into different times and spaces. And it's really just a way of reflecting that all things are interconnected within the Force. And when you get to the right kind of place within the Force, you're able to access anything within yourself or within anywhere, anytime. It is all one.
There was that Dave Filoni quote. I think Caitlin from Sky Talker, she brought it up. And I think you played it also in your Mortis episode, where Dave Filoni is talking about Ezra, that he's kind of experienced the world between worlds before he finally does towards the end of season four, that when he's with Yoda and he gets his kyber crystal, he's there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Yoda kind of laughs because Ezra says it's like a field of stars, and Yoda kind of laughs and says, oh, is that what you see? Because each person's experience of being in the Force, being in this elsewhere location, which is kind of like the deepest part of ourselves, but also the Force, is personalized to what they bring in with them.
Right. You had mentioned Anakin, his visions of Mortis, that was all catered to him and to his journey.
Yeah.
And so similarly, the same thing happens to Ezra. And we suspect the same thing will happen with Rey and Kylo, that they might not see world between worlds the way Ezra does. They might not be bridges, but they'll see something to them, hopefully. But yeah, so then Dave Filoni says that when Ezra is able to finally go to the world between worlds in season four, it's because he's unlocked that ability, that he has this understanding and he's able to get there. A big idea is that Rey and Kylo, they don't even know that they're experiencing the Force when they're having their Force bond and connections. They at least don't realize it yet. So hopefully in The Rise of Skywalker, they'll be able to unlock more of their powers together. And they'll realize that, oh, when we're communicating to each other, it's in that place. It's in the elsewhere place, as you call it.
Yes. Well, and specifically, like, the Force bond and the Force time or Force Skype is this place. They specifically tried to make it sound like a bubble. Like, everything is kind of dumbed down. They can't really hear the sounds outside of it. They can only hear each other echo in the space. Because in that moment, them together is the only things that matters. The only thing that matters. It is a shared space that they have created. We know things can transfer through it. So it is like this elsewhere world between worlds that was made for Ezra specifically, but it's them together.
Right. And
they have made it together.
They've created it. And it's not, oh, Snoke created it. No, Rey and Kylo are the ones who created it. And it's kind of cool to think that they don't see anything but each other. They don't see surroundings.
And I think it really ties to them being isolated and feeling isolated, because the only thing that exists for them normally is themselves. But when they are together, they are not alone. there together but isolated. It's fascinating to think about from that perspective.
It's so good.
I do want to call out like what they say specifically with regards to kind of sequel trilogy voices. So the voices that start with kind of Kylo says, "Show me," and Rey says, "We'll see each other again." Kylo, "Grandfather." Rey, "I believe that." Kylo, "And I will finish." Anakin, "I won't lose you, Padme." Kylo, "What you started." I mean, I'll just call it out. Reverse Annadella.
It was on purpose. They chose those voices on purpose. They chose the order on purpose. And they're pretty much giving us a hint of what Anakin was missing and what Kylo and Rey are missing and will hopefully find together by the end of all of this.
Yep, exactly. Let's talk about, you know, the broad brushstrokes of World Between Worlds. Ezra is guided by the Force Convery, the Morai, which is the daughter. So a creature that has come from the Force, from the previous Force experience. So almost like created from Anakin's other world travel.
Right, exactly. And it comes through with its connection to Ahsoka.
With its connection to Ahsoka, because it is reminding Ezra, and it specifically pulls Ezra to the gateway of the past where his former guilt was. He always felt bad that, you know, Ahsoka is gone. He struggled with that the whole third season. And this is, you know, right up to the end of the third season. Or sorry, this is through the third season and almost the whole of the fourth season that he has struggled with this guilt. And he has the opportunity to bring somebody on his, you know, mystical spirit journey into the Force with him. Why must there be two?
Well, we covered the twin sons and the binary option, but it really, because he enters the space alone and he doesn't explore it alone. He could have had this whole entire journey. It's his story, right? Rebels is about him, but he doesn't go through it alone. Instead, he brings someone with him who is able to help him in the next step that he faces during this spiritual, mystical journey.
Yeah, and who is like a companion older than him, his binary in some way, because he is a man and she is a woman, you know, somebody who was on the edge of death and he is full of life. Really, really interesting parallels that are being drawn there. I mean, I feel like Rey might actually literally save Kylo from death at one point, like pull him out of nowhere elsewhere.
I think that has to happen. I think it would be a waste not to do it at this point. But like after all of these parallels between everything, it and I want it. You know, in my head, I kind of had imagined that they would sync up their powers and help each other. But I think it would be really cool if they're using the bond itself in this way, or to this third space and helping each other through that. So I do hope it happens in a parallel. And then we'll come back and say, well, it was in Rebels first.
So they then go on a journey and they are kind of trying to figure out what's going on. And Ezra is like, once he realizes he can change things, like he can, you know, bring people into this location, he attempts to go and save Kanan. And Ahsoka talks with him and gives him the guidance that it would undo his sacrifice and it would change things that are not meant to be changed.
Right, because if Kanan didn't survive, then Ezra and Hera would both die in that moment just by pulling him back. And that in the big scheme of things, he was making that sacrifice knowingly. Kanan was. He went into it clearly knowing what he was doing and sacrificing himself for both of them.
I'm wondering if we will get some sort of version of temptation like that in their shared bubble. Speaking to the Rise of Skywalker.
Right. For Rey and Kylo. I think you had mentioned that it could be that they try and bring back Han, or that some reference is made to Han. And it would be so powerful and moving. And if Rey is able to talk to Kylo about what happened, and he kind of avoids all the answers. It kind of felt, you know, not satisfying in The Last Jedi. I think on purpose, that instead of answering Rey's questions, he almost just turns the tables back on her about her own issues. And so that thread is still left open for that. He needs to kind of confront what happened and move forward. And that's the only way that he can move forward.
Exactly. And then, you know, after, you know, stepping away from that temptation and the fear of loss of Kanan, the permanent loss, you know, like he had an opportunity, but it was the permanent loss of Kanan. He sees, and from a metatextual perspective, we learn the scientist having the conversation with Sabine, your friend is not safe. The Emperor has his ways. Okay. And then the Emperor shows up. And so Darth Sidious shows up with his cauldron on the outside of a portal. We do not know when this is. Outside
what are you suggesting?
I'm just saying that we can't confirm when it is.
Yeah.
It could be any time that the Emperor exists. There's a really, really interesting quote that is said about this episode in one of the Rebels. Actually about this episode, and let me see if I can actually pull it up. Okay, you ready? I think this is the right quote. this is the right thing. You're gonna love it.
Is an expression of Palpatine's interest in arcane knowledge.
What I love about this episode is that it actually exposes something that is not part of the regular Rebel mission, and it's not the known entity of what they're doing. What you get a little bit more understanding around is what the Emperor might be after in terms of furthering his own power, not just about taking over control of the galaxy and ruling with order, but what other devious things he might be wanting to discover that sort of secure him as the ultimate power in the universe.
What?
Wait a minute. So he's just not wanting to rule politically? He might be wanting power spiritually too?
Yeah. And that was Carrie Beck, who's you know, one of the executive producers for Star Wars Rebels. What did you think of that quote? So he learns something from this experience. What is he after? He's after this location. He wants ultimate power, as always. Dave Filoni goes on later on in the Rebels Recon to talk about how he's kind of always after, you know, the new thing that can get him all of the power that he's ever wanted and everything that he's ever lacked.
I mean, the ultimate power would be controlling the Force, right? So that would be the goal. And he sees this as the pathway to that.
As a pathway to that, yeah. And he fails to be brought into this location, right? He cannot be brought in. He tries to pull Ezra out. But then he realizes, I think, that two people are required to enter this particular location.
Definitely. In that episode, in World Between Worlds, that's when he uses kind of like a force rope to try and pull Ezra back. And that obviously doesn't get him inside. So he realizes, okay, they're both in there. So I can't enter alone. I'm going to need another person to enter me. And that's the only way that I can pull this power. So
who is his opposite in the galaxy, Hammy?
Rey from nowhere. If you haven't listened to Dark Union, here's another plug. Go listen to Dark Union.
Well, and I didn't even bring up all of this Rebel stuff in there because I really wanted to get the theory out, you know, before I really had a chance to kind of think of the larger saga and the larger story. But it makes so much sense. And this is actually Ian's voice in this episode. Like, they pulled him into the studio, they got him to do it. I suspect that we're going to get some Clone Wars episodes with him in it, because they actually redid an earlier episode of Rebels where Sam Witwer had played the Emperor, and the connotations on the Emperor's voice changed a little bit.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
And we were all wondering, why did they bring him in?
I think they were, recording probably for Clone Wars. And in some ways, I think they were probably recording for The Rise of Skywalker. He was already in the studio.
So we think in this moment, in World Between Worlds, Palpatine something, he learns that he can't elsewhere by himself. He needs another person. He tries, we're going to get there, but he tries with Ezra. But he disregards Ahsoka. He doesn't try with her. She is supposed to be the symbol of the daughter. So perhaps in the next iteration of all of this, he will try with the daughter.
And I love that you pointed this out in the notes, so I'm going to let you see it, say it.
So if Rey is representing the daughter, the idea is, another example of it is that when Ezra goes into World Between Worlds, the daughter opens the door and the son closes it. And so ideally it would be her and Kylo. They would be the actual pair that are able to go to elsewhere, go to worlds, whatever that be in the Force. That's something that only the two of them are able to do. And it's pure and it's not wanting to control it. I don't think that's what they're going to want to do, because although some people see Kylo as this ultimate villain, that is not what he's looking for. He's looking for belonging, and so is Rey. That's what their both of their end goals is. Whereas Palpatine will always be the person who just wants to possess more and more and more, and that will not make the Force happy. So
exactly. Again, there's a lot of parallels to the fact that the daughter and the son of the Mortis gods, these archetypes, are not necessarily called the daughter and the son. It's this trio, these archetypes, these three that play out throughout time. And really what Palpatine and the father represent is the darkness within ourselves. It is our shadow. It is the thing that we're always trying to struggle against. And the only way that we can move past that is by finding the balance within ourselves and finding the third way, that is out beyond selfishness and selflessness. We move towards the self.
Slow clap. Beautiful, beautiful.
There's another moment, yeah, that I really do want to bring up for season four, which could definitely play in, which is that Ezra is captured. So Rey is captured potentially. And he is led to a kind of a room with a piece of the temple in it. And in some ways, this is like the temptation, the final temptation before Ezra must do what he knows needs to be done, which is kind of save his whole planet. If the planet is like the galaxy, that is what's happening.
That's how the parallels would work. And what's also interesting now is the shape and the piece of that temple also is really interesting. I noticed that too as well when I was rewatching it. So we know that Palpatine has learned from World Between Worlds, from that episode. He's learned that he can't just pull Ezra. He has to go in with Ezra. And he does that. He literally tempts Ezra with his family. He does all of this to kind of seduce and market himself as well as he can to poor Ezra. He does version of himself, which we know that he puts on an act, and he's not bad guy Sith Palpatine. He's young. Oh, this guy would never hurt you. This person is someone who Anakin could trust. Now someone who Ezra could trust. That's what he's trying to portray. So he makes himself
like the gentle, kindly father type representative. And this really ties back to like the concept that he can He is a trickster. He is the master deceiver. And he will appear to be something that you think you need. So for Rey, she seeks belonging and an understanding of her own power and acceptance of that. And she has that from Kylo, but perhaps the Emperor, Darth Sidious, Sheev Palpatine, will be offering her that in a similar fashion. And again, this is for kids to give us these concepts in a way that the audience, being, you know, somewhere between the ages of 6 and 12, can consume in an, you know, in a bite-sized fashion. He looks appealing. He looks gentle. He looks trustworthy. And he appears younger, right? We could very well see a young Palpatine, and it will totally make sense to kids because they've seen it before, right? And if they see young Palpatine again after they've seen The Rise of Skywalker, they will be like, I know his tricks. Don't fall for it, Ezra. Like, you know, like repetitive storytelling works both ways.
No, and it's very much part of most fairy tales where the hero is tempted as well. I think a lot of us are hoping that Rey's journey isn't done, right? Everyone thinks she's good. It's over. We tied that bow in The Last Jedi and there's no more story to tell with her. But I don't think a lot of Reylos think that. I think a lot of Reylos hope that Rey's journey isn't done yet. And this is a big part of that. This final temptation that you mentioned that Ezra goes through, a lot of mm-hmm. fairy tales and stories also have that. The true villain is offering you something that you've been looking for this entire time. And you become the hero when you know everything that you need to know and you reject that temptation because you've achieved enlightenment and that's what your end goal is. And we're all hoping for that with Rey. And as a joke, I know you said young Palpatine. If it's Matt Smith, I think everyone will give you credit for that.
Well, that was actually my friend Raven Maiden, who I let listen to the I ran the theory past before I recorded it. And she was like, oh, my God, what about Matt Smith? And I'm like, OK, yeah, that could be the thing because he kind of looks like him.
I love her. To give her a shout out. She's awesome. You know,
again, this is like giving the woman, the maiden, what she wants so that he can control her power. OK, so. What else does Rey want other than belonging and, you know, obviously a hot piece of Kylo, you know, to love her, which, you know, maybe Palpatine thinks, oh, yeah, I could totally be that for you.
Barf.
She wants, you know, the suffering of the galaxy to end. So maybe the temptation that he gives her is like, join me and I will let you, you know, bring an end to the war. To the Star Wars.
Yeah, I think that definitely could be it. All the suffering, all the pain that everyone's been going through, he could be the path. At least he paints himself as the way.
As the path, yeah.
Especially if, unfortunately, if Kylo is still, if they're still butting heads, or if they're not completely on the same at that moment. And I think they won't be. For this to work, they would have to be a little bit not in agreement. So that could be something that he offers. And then we see it with Ezra. Palpatine offers him his pen. So that, I mean, I don't know if that would be something that Rey would still be strong. I suspect so. That she wants to find out about her parents or something with her parents could be brought back again.
Yeah, I mean, they brought that up quite heavily in this episode with Ezra, like the temptation to go back and actually be with his parents was there. They were just beyond the veil. Right.
Yeah. And I love, I mean, since I was a Harry Potter fan before Star Wars, that's a big part of it, right? As there a big moment in Harry's journey is when Sirius passes through the veil. And of course, mm-hmm. he just wants to reach out and grab him because he's just right there, right? He's right beyond it. And of course, you know, Lupin has to stop him and he you know, you can't go beyond that. And so the same thing happens, I think, with Ezra. It's almost exactly the same because he reaches out and his parents are reaching out and you really think he's mm-hmm. going to go for it. And then he denies the temptation and he doesn't give in to it.
Yeah, and he learns, like, you know, he learns the meaning of sacrifice, and he learns the way to save his planet, you know, the planet being the allegory for the galaxy, is by, you know, using nature, so the wolves and the purgles and kind of all of the friends he's made along the way, to remove the threat from the planet.
Right, exactly.
To take it away.
Yeah, he destroys the temple, and in that Lothal is finally able to have peace. That could manifest itself in the Rise of Skywalker in a couple of waves.
Like, and he uses the Purgle, the these forces of nature and the wolves themselves, you know, as tools and instruments. So he almost uses the planet itself and also the Purgle of space to take the Imperial attack fleet away. He takes them elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
He takes them elsewhere.
Yeah, we don't know where they are right now because mm-hmm. they are beyond, supposedly.
Yeah, exactly. He, like, literally removes them from the equation. And maybe that's part of it. Maybe that's what happens to the Emperor in the end. Rey removes him from the equation, very much like the end of Avatar The Last Airbender, The Legend of Aang. Like, instead of killing the Fire Lord, he removes his power to hurt other people. Because you can never truly end the endless suffering through death.
Yeah, yeah. I think that ending with Palpatine, I think it will be really unique. I don't think it will be, at least I hope it's not, oh, Rey and Kylo fighting, you know, till he dies. You know, just stab, stab, stab. Much more meaningful to have a different kind of ending that would align with what we've seen before in Star Wars.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I very much hope for that too. And it's I don't know, I hope that you've come along on this journey with us. We got to the end of Rebels and we certainly speculated a lot on what will happen in The Rise of Skywalker. I'm sure it's going to blow us away even more than some of the things that we pointed out, but our point is that Star Wars is telling us this repetitive story, these motifs, this narrative structure, these character journeys are important. So it's really valuable to actually, like, kind of pay attention and be like, hey, why this story? What is the story telling me that's beyond just this story? Not that it's not okay to just enjoy the story. That's perfectly okay. But if you're looking for, hey, why is this important to Star Wars and why is this important to me? Paying attention to the repetitive storytelling really does help.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. The connection adds layers to your own understanding, but then it also makes everything a lot more meaningful, that these choices are made purposefully and by the writers or the creators, producers. It's not, you know, Palpatine isn't just thrown in there just to be thrown mm-hmm. in there.
He is brought back because there's questions that need to be answered that were not previously answered. There is a missing open wound that still needs to be healed. And the galaxy itself has to have a response to Sheev Palpatine.
And I think we'll definitely get that. I think, so from what we've seen, it will be the entire galaxy. We won't know Rey and Kylo. They'll obviously be the Force part of it. But I think on the Resistance side, a lot of people they probably didn't expect to come together will be coming together to fight against Palpatine and his forces. So it's going to be great. It's going to be exciting. And we've all seen this story before. So
as Freddie Prinze Jr. said, yes.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. He was like, I already know what's going to happen because I've seen what's for. And I also love when he said that the Force decides. It's not about, you know, the power. Obviously, Rian Johnson, we love. And he says, you know, the Force is not a power that you had. Freddie mm-hmm. pretty much wrote that again and said, it's not about who's trained harder, all of that. The Force decides. The Force is what decides who wins and loses. So
mm-hmm. exactly. Well, thank you, Hammy, for coming on the show and helping with this crazy discussion of how, oh, hey, we already know lots of stuff because they told us before. We just didn't know we needed to pay attention conversation.
No, it was great. Thank you so much for coming up with this idea. And then it was totally worth it. I know we had, I think all of us theorizing had noticed small parallels, but to put it together into this big structure and see, okay, it's all connected to the Force. Everybody's journey is repeating. It's just crazy to think about like this. So
yeah. Yeah. And it really does help you to be like, okay, what is Star Wars trying to tell us from a meta perspective? And, you know, what, how can we take a little piece of that home with us?
Definitely.
So where can people find you online, Hammy, if they're looking for your supreme knowledge and memes?
Both. You have to be balanced. If anyone wants to follow me, they can follow me on Twitter. I am Balanced Padawan on Twitter. And so you will see simultaneous tweets, me responding to MC with theories and ideas and mythology, but then right after, a silly meme. So thank you so much for having me on again. It was so much fun. I can't wait for the next 2 months. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited too. Thank you for listening to What the Force. I'm Marie-Claire Gould, your host. Our music is the What the Force theme, orchestral music by Christy Carew for What the Force. We have a Patreon at patreon.com/whattheforce. We'd like to thank all our patrons, especially those who love What the Force. And for those patrons obsessed with What the Force, Melody, Night Huntress in Wild Space, Susan, Jessica, Cassandra Corvid, Brad, Black Eyed Lily, and Anna Perez. Make sure you like and subscribe on YouTube or leave a 5-star review on iTunes or other pod apps. It helps people find the show. You can connect with us on Twitter at WT Force Show, at What the Force Podcast on Facebook, or on our website at whattheforce.ca. Feel free to reach out to us and start a conversation. Cheers.